Yo, what up, everybody? This is season 4, episode 2 of the D Lynch Show podcast. I'm here with my man Preston, aka Young LORD from Rocky Beats. I appreciate your time, bro. What's going on, man? How you been living?
I'm good, man. How about you, man? Just trying to stay safe and above ground in these crazy times. You feel me? How about yourself?
Man, likewise, trying to stay busy, you know, just hired somebody for my whole little beat selling business and just trying to stay active, bro. I got some financial goals I'm trying to hit. I got, some work output goals I'm trying to hit. I'm trying to get to the point where I'm posting up a new beat every single day like I was, you know.
Right.
I was kind of like at that like last fall, but, you know, the waves of life sometimes.
It gets in the way. It's crazy. I feel like every producer gets on this put out a beat a day thing and it's very easy for life to get in the way of that.
Yeah, man.
It's a lot harder than it seems for some reason.
Yeah, man. And it's well, at least for me, it's hard to stay inspired. You know, we talk about that beat block thing. I don't know how often you go through that, but I guess that's a good thing we can start off, man. Like, you know, because I have a mixture of both artists and producers that listen to this. So for like a young producer who's coming up and struggling with beat block, what would you recommend for them to do?
Listen to new music, find new sounds. That's my number one go-to. Every time I have beat block, I'm like, you know what? I need new sounds. Either I'm going to go seek out a new VST or go download some new packs or, you know, if I need to browse through Splice, whatever I got to do, like, I need new inspiration. And usually new sounds is, like, the first step to new inspiration for me.
Yeah, for sure, man. It's important sometimes, I feel like, to kind of just step away a little bit too, you know. Sometimes when you're trying to make a beat, you're putting so much brain power into it, and sometimes it's too much, you know what I'm saying?
Sometimes you gotta go outside, man. Watch some TV, check out a movie or something. You know, you can get inspired by pretty much anything. So sometimes it is good to just let your brain take a little break from, trying to figure out patterning and sequencing and all that.
Yeah, no doubt. Well, I just thought, you know, that was a good question to ask because we were on the subject anyway. But I don't want to spend too much time on that, man. I really want to give you an opportunity to let all the listeners that currently listen, you know what your background is, how you got started in producing, and then we can dig a little bit more into how you came upon MIDI money and what your experience has been like with that. But let's start at the basic, man. Around what age did you start producing, and then when did you start taking it seriously, and what made you take it seriously?
So everything kind of hit for me in like 99, and around the time I was in ninth grade, like my freshman year of high school, was kind of just looking for a new outlet, and I want to say I just somehow stumbled upon the first version of FL Studio, which was Fruity Loops at the time, of course we all know. But back then, like, all we had was Cool Edit Pro, you know, and I was trying to rap, so I kind of learned how to do the Cool Edit and do loops and all that other stuff, and it led me straight into Fruity Loops, and I started tinkering around, making terrible beats, the most terrible beats anyone's ever heard in their life. But
I can relate to that.
But the one thing that actually did kind of really kickstart me like in the right direction was because I had to learn Cool Edit Pro, and because I had to learn how to sample and loop and do all that. You know, the internet was so slow back then. You couldn't do a whole beat. You couldn't do a whole MP3, like a whole 3 megabytes took fucking all day to download.
Yeah, no kidding.
So, you know, everything was beat loops back then, and it taught me how to sample chop. So, like, right at that particular time was, like, the perfect time to start sampling. Everybody was throwing the MPC, and I had kind of figured out that I could sample and do the same thing people were doing on the MPC with Fruity Loops because I had learned to chop samples, like, perfectly, you know.
Okay.
Like perfect loops. And, I jumped on the first version of basically everything on the internet right now, which was mp3.com back then, which was the first like platform that was ever paying artists and producers online.
Yeah,
and
I remember that.
My beats took off, man. I was like,
really?
Yeah, man. I was like one of the first ones to like hit 1 million plays. Like, you know, it's probably like 10 or 15 of us like from that original era that like hit 1 million plays. And a lot of those are still like really big, you know,
damn,
producers right now, and all of them have names and credits. So you know, that, it's a really dope thing to be a part of.
Dude, that's interesting to me because I talk to a lot of producers, you know, especially people within our community that, you know, started with SoundClick and they're like, yeah, you know, sick, I'm popping on SoundClick and I put a buy button on there and yada. Man, you were doing it before even SoundClick. That's remarkable. Yeah, that's crazy.
So, before PayPal buy buttons, basically, like we were the first, basically back then there was no beat leasing at that particular time. Everything was exclusives.
Okay.
So if somebody wanted to buy a beat, you know, it's $300, $500, you know, whatever we were charging back then, which was ridiculous. For some reason, we all had this mindset like, oh, well, Timbaland and them are charging fucking $70,000, $80,000. I should be able to get a couple hundred, right? And so everything was exclusives. Like, that was like almost everybody's prices was up there. Like, nobody did cheap beats or anything like that. Hmm. So as a freshman in high school, I was started generating a couple grand a month, you know, like,
oh yeah,
no bills. So all of a sudden, you know, I'm the man, my wardrobe jumped through the roof and got T-Mobile sidekicks and shit.
Yeah, so, man. So I guess it's safe to say that really at no point did you really ever consider like, yeah, I'm going to get a regular job. You're like, nah, this is what I'm doing.
So this is the thing though. I actually had a regular job at first. Like I had my first job in high school as well. I worked at a hotel. I was like a houseman. So I would basically go and, you know, answer room service calls and take mints to people's pillows and all types of random crap they would have me doing, clean up pool area, whatever. I started early working, but I probably only had maybe two or three jobs, man. And I was, as an artist, I've seen some success too. So I had an opportunity to go on tour with Crown Mob one time. And I asked for 2 weeks off of my job and they told me no. And I was like, I was like, y'all thought I was asking y'all. I was like, I wasn't asking. I was telling y'all that I'm going. I was like, so since I guess y'all don't want me to go, I was like, I'll just put in my 2 weeks notice. And that was like the last job I ever had.
Interesting. That's really interesting, man. That's definitely a unique story. I definitely never heard of anybody selling beats through mp3.com and actually having success with it before. That's really unique.
Well, it's dope. If you're familiar with Wish, like Wishmaster, he's one of the original mp3.com era producers as well.
He
went through all the eras, you know. He went through that era, SoundClick era, and you know, he's still in this era doing extremely well from, you know, what I know. It's my dog.
Yeah, for sure, man. It's the origins of what we have now, essentially, with the beat leasing game. And you know, that speaking of all the eras, man, going through so many eras like that to where we are now with BeatStars and, you know, this new era going into ClickFunnels, you know, I'm sure there's a lot, but what are like a couple of like the major differences you have seen change from like mp3.com to BeatStars to so on and so forth?
Well, in the mp3.com era, there was probably only a couple hundred producers that you could find online at that time. Like, you know, at that time you had to build your own website or, you know, be on a platform like mp3.com. Everybody's internet connection was slow, so it was really, really limited. And now it's just been picked up and, you know, there's so much information out there, so many tutorials. So there's a big gap in the, you know, the level of competition, I should say. You know, there's tons of people doing it and they're learning at an extremely fast rate. So, yeah. You know, but and then I think in 99, when I really started with Fruity, I was still doing like hardware stuff. I figured out how to hook an MPC into it and like real keyboards and, you know, use analog sounds and do everything all at once. And now you don't have to do any of that, basically. You know, you don't have to, but you can't. So that's another big difference. But right now we live in an era where beats are plentiful, you know, artists are plentiful, beats are plentiful. So you really can't charge 80,000 like Timbaland and them used to for a beat. Cause there's
beats
and everybody knows how to make everybody's style of beats now. You know, there's no, you know, we gotta wait for something new and innovative to come out for somebody to start charging crazy numbers again. So.
Right. Do you think the level of competition and level of new artists and new producers that are popping up every single day, do you look at that as a positive or a negative thing?
No, it's completely positive, man. Music heals the world, man.
Yeah, agree.
I always tell people, that music really can't get oversaturated. Like everything that we do it to a beat. I mean, whether it's walking in the middle of the grocery store, there's something playing in the background, going up the elevator, watching TVs, movies, like music's everywhere. I'm like, so, you know, why fight it? There should be definitely be more creators. And the more that we can make a living economy off of music, the better for all of us. So, you know, that's what I want.
Right. Yeah, I fully agreed, man. I think that, you know, the more music is out there, the better for the world. And competition is good for business. That's how I look at it. You know what I mean? Right. And it always will be good for business. It'll always, you know, you can either be motivated by it or you can feel some type of way about it and let it consume you. But I feel like it's just personally how you respond to it rather. So, so, all right, man. So with going through all these different eras, you know, like I briefly mentioned it a second ago, I feel like we're definitely quickly going into a new era of selling beats. Through what we both do now with ClickFunnels. And I know for myself, I have seen a tremendous difference from what I was doing before to now, especially when you talk about input versus output, you know what I mean? You know, of course, I want anybody to think that this shit's not work because it's a lot of work, but it's, you know, when you compare it to what we were doing before, it ain't, you know, it ain't the same. Right. But with that said, man, how did you first stumble upon, you know, the whole ClickFunnels idea, MIDI money, whatever it was that you first got, you know, familiar with it? And what was it that made you be like, okay, yeah, this is something I want to involve my business in?
So for me, like, I've always been like just a straight up net nerd anyway. So, you know, as, you know, taking different paths to try to figure out what to do to promote my beats, I built my own websites and did all this other stuff, picked up graphic design. So I had some little side hobbies, and ClickFunnels was actually something I picked up for a side business of mine and did really, you know, did really great things with it, but just hadn't quite applied it to my music yet.
Right.
So, I did some great things for, you know, a company, which, I ain't going to promote them because we ain't talking about them right now, but did some great things for them through ClickFunnels. And then when I saw Gabe's ad just talking about specifically what he was doing with ClickFunnels, I was like, man, he's completely right. And I was like, and even though I already know a lot about ClickFunnels, I'm like, he deserves to get this money from me because just take me through it. I'm like, and I'm sure there's some piece of the puzzle that I'm missing. And there was one piece in that puzzle that he had that I hadn't quite put my finger on yet. And then, you know, bought the course, bought all in, and just was like, oh man, this makes so much sense. And I just went full steam ahead with
it. Yeah. Yeah. Similar to me too. I became familiar with ClickFunnels quite a while ago. I came across some artist who was running an ad, and he was selling, you know, not only his CDs through ClickFunnels, but he was basically like selling the game of how he was successful through with ClickFunnels. You know what I mean?
Right.
So I signed up. Shit, I think I made my first ClickFunnels account like 2.5-3 years ago, and I didn't really understand it. You know what I mean? Like, I kind of just was like, whatever. I was kind of just so involved in what I was doing at the time. I was doing the whole chase and placements game, you know.
Right. Yeah,
I was kind of, yeah, man. So I kind of was just like, at first I was like, all right, whatever. But I saw, like, you saw Gabe's ad, and I was like, okay, let me see what this is about. And I signed up for the webinar, dude, and I probably got like 10 minutes into the webinar, and I was like, oh shit, these are the pieces of the puzzle that I was missing.
Right.
Okay, this makes a lot more sense now. Right. So I got involved in it, you know, and I'll say for me, and please let me know if this is the same for you, more or less, or whatever it might be, whatever your case might be. But I know for myself, since I started, it's been like a drastic improvement almost all across the board for my business, not just in sales, but, you know, the relationship I have with my clients, the relationships I'm making with other producers, et cetera, et cetera. How has that changed for you since you started doing it?
Oh man, it's increased everything. It's increased the amount of communication that I do with artists, which is really, really big for me. As a producer, you know, for any other producer that's out there listening, you know, your earnings are directly tied to the amount of communication that you do with artists, right? So once you figure out a systematic way to kind of increase that, like, you're going to start to see your numbers move. You're going to see your sales move. And, you know, that's like everything has been a dramatic change for me. Like the amount of relationships I've made with other producers that I've seen and known for years on the internet that have been doing great things, you know, start to, you know, develop relationships with them and find a new talent like pretty much every day. Like literally I have like some of the craziest artists I've ever met. And I've even been giving away free exclusives to some artists. Cause I was like, yo, some of these cats are just super talented and they deserve, you know, that extra, they deserve that extra push. So, you know, I'm just trying to help do my part, man.
Yeah, man. That last bit has been huge for me too. Cause you know, I won't say it was every case, but it was a lot of cases, you know, before where I get beats back and people send me songs and I just wasn't really feeling it. You know what I mean?
Right.
And then since I started changing how I go about selling beats and leasing beats, it's the same thing. Like most of these artists that I'm meeting and coming into contact with are dope. And most of the songs I'm getting back are dope. And I'm actually proud of them. And I'm like, fuck yeah, I'll promote this. This shit's hot. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
And that's, I mean, I feel like that's what every producer ultimately wants from the first day that we start making beats. You know, we don't just make beats, you know, so I guess maybe some of us listen to our own beats and make them just to listen to them. But most of us, like, we want people to rap on them. You know what I mean? And then we want it to be good.
I want somebody to get on my beat and make me say, ooh, after I've heard my beat 50,000 times and if I'm almost tired of it, I want somebody to get on it and send it back to me and me be like, oh my God, yo, they just killed this. Like
absolutely, bro. And then all of a sudden it makes that song fresh and then you listen to it 50,000 more times because it's like a whole new song. You know what I mean? That's right. So let's talk a little bit about, cause this is something I actually don't know. We've engaged a lot through, you know, the whole mini money thing, but something I actually don't know is, you know, talk about a little bit about your industry background, what your industry experience is like, dude, what placements you have, if any.
Right.
You know, so I'd like to let people know about that.
So most of my placements are like TV, movie, video games. Me and Wish collabed when I was younger. The song over one of his tracks, we got on a big video game that MTV promoted the hell out of.
What game was that?
It was called LA Rush.
And I've heard of that.
Like the first game with West Coast Customs in it, you know, when they was doing Pimp My Ride.
Mm-hmm.
So we did that. And then I've got TV credits for like Saturday Night Live, VH1, 40 Most Shocking Breakups, CBS Sports, you know, just a bunch of stuff with songs that I've written, produced, recorded, mixed, mastered in my bedroom like any other artist can. So, you know, for anybody out there that's wondering, like, I used to worry so much about the quality of my music. And then when stuff started happening, I'm like, man, I've been doing right this whole time. So, you know, don't worry too much about, I don't want to say don't worry about the quality, worry about your quality. But, you know, if your quality is good, you know, start worrying about your output. You know, that's, so for me, having that, and I, you know, I've got a friend, a personal friend of mine, goes by KY. He's in the industry. He's a famous engineer to, you know, artists like 2 Chainz. He's done stuff with Missy Elliott, Waka Flocka. Like, he's done some of everybody's favorite songs. He got me a placement with Nicki Minaj, which was great, you know, on her first big mixtape. So, you know, that did a lot.
That's huge. You know,
getting some extra push and being affiliated with somebody who's done amazing things in the industry. So, you know, shout out to Nicki and shout out to my dog KY for giving me that placement.
That's amazing, man. That's not only one of the biggest names in hip hop, but the TV placements. I mean, these are highly syndicated shows. I mean, they're no joke. Saturday Night Live has been around for shit. How many years at this point, man?
Like,
you know,
like ever. Like to me, it's amazing to be able to hear my music used in places like that, and to know that that's achievable. I'm from Kentucky, so you know, to not have a major outlet or any major label connections, but just, you know,
it's huge.
You know, it's huge to be able to say, oh, okay, I can get from here all the way to there, you know, just on sheer, you know, will, drive, dedication, and, you know, pursuit of my goals. So
absolutely, bro. It's huge. And it's also amazing to me that, you know, like you said, these are songs that you mixed and you mastered in your bedroom. You know what I mean? And I think that is so fucking cool that we live in this day and age to where, man, like, I've personally mixed records right here in my home studio where I'm recording this right now. And I played them in big studios, and, you know, guys that work there and worked there for 20 years, they're like, I wouldn't have known that you did this in your house if you told me. Like, I can't tell the difference. Yeah, you know, and the fact that that's common is
up a lot. So, you know,
100%. The fact that it's common is incredible. You know what I mean? And the fact that it's achievable is, you know, again, it's not easy. Nothing about what we do is easy, but it's right. achievable if you're really dedicated to it. And
that's true.
How the game has changed just from that, you know, not needing labels and not needing a manager and not needing the A&Rs, et cetera, is man, it's great.
It's still great to have, though. So, you know, to anybody out there that's wondering, you know, if you can – put a team together, please put a team together.
Oh, yeah.
So try not to go at this thing all by yourself, because it is a lot harder. And, you know, it's worth it, but, you know, it's definitely a lot harder. So, to me, though, every little accomplishment, just, you know, every being able to put everything, you know, on my resume is just, like, so huge for me. So, you know, I'm awaiting the point where I'm able to build my team. You know, just like you said, you know, you just hire somebody for your company.
Yeah.
That's the next phase of what I'm about to do. I'm looking for people to hire right now. So, you know, it's about expansion and growth, man. That's what phase me in right now.
100%, man. And I believe that at some point, if you don't have a team, you're going to hit a ceiling. Like, I actually heard, I think it was Common talking about how if you're trying to do this by yourself, you'll never hit the highest level, because it's just not possible. You'll hit a ceiling, you'll burn out. Like, you need extra manpower. You know what I mean? Right. At what point do you think is a good time, if any, if there is such thing as a good time to start building your team? And who would you say is the number one person you should start with, the most, like, key member of said team?
Ooh, that's an awesome question. I would probably say a manager. And the reason why I would say a manager or a booking agent, booking agent would help too. Like, if you're a more established artist, but if you're just starting out, it'd probably be a manager. Don't expect your manager to pay for shit for you. Let me just get that out there. I know a lot of artists have this weird misconception that if they get someone to manage them, that they should be investing all of their money into them. It doesn't really work like that. This person is supposed to manage you and your activities and help you make the most of your time, which is something that we as artists are, you know, it's very easy to lose track of, you know, what you're doing and not be fully organized. So, you know, even if it's, you know, just one of your dedicated best friends that, you know, just wants to be there on the ride with you, you know, you don't have to do business with every one of your friends. But if you know somebody really has, you know, the kind of business savvy for it, you know, let them be the person that keeps you in line and keeps you on a schedule and make sure that you get things done in a timely fashion, because that'll be the most helpful thing that you can do for yourself as an artist, you know, and as a producer, you know, just to have an extra set of legs, an extra mouth, you know, and not having to be the bad guy all the time. Sometimes you know, when it's your friend, you don't want to tell him you charge him a couple hundred dollars for this beat if he wants it exclusive. But your manager can say that with a straight face and don't care if he says no.
Right. And it's crazy, because it's almost like with different roles in this industry, it's people expect that from a manager. You know what I mean? If somebody comes and is like, hey, I got $500 for you, and your manager is like, fuck out of here, it's $1,000. Like, right. Nobody's going to turn. I mean, somebody might make a side comment and be like, ah, this dude's like a manager, whatever.
Right.
But that was never going to hurt your reputation as an artist or a producer. Never.
Ever.
But if you go and do that, that could ruin your reputation very quickly.
Yeah.
Be like, oh, yeah, he's an asshole. You know what I mean?
He's an asshole.
Yeah.
Straight up and down. So, yeah, it's. Like, I had a manager for the first leg of my my rap career. Like, you know, I started rapping young. Somebody introduced me to somebody, and pretty much we hit it off. And, you know, he was like, yo, I would love to manage you if you would let me. I'm like, yo, sure. So, you know, he had the business savvy. He got me a lot of shows. He taught me a lot about the industry, you know. And if you are going to get a manager, get somebody that wants to know about the industry. Get somebody that wants to know about the contract side and, you know, what's happening outside of just the studio. Don't get somebody that's only interested in the music. They need to be interested in the business part too.
Absolutely. And get somebody you can trust.
That's a fact.
Yeah, 100%. Because, like, you know, like you just said, they're managing your time, essentially. And time is money. So, therefore, they're really managing your money. Even though a business manager, that's really what a business manager does, which is a whole nother thing. Like, dude, for as much as you have to trust your manager, your business manager, like, you better be able to trust that person with your life, because that's basically right. What you're doing.
Right.
But I mean, it's not that different for a manager. You know what I mean? I've been through a few different managers, and I kind of have like a de facto manager right now. You know, I'm right. self-managed, but I definitely have help. You know, I have somebody I advise with when I, you know, have to make a big decision, et cetera, et cetera. But right. the time management thing, dude, is so crucial. Like, you're right. When you're doing so much and you're responsible for so much, it's easy to get distracted and it's easy to lose track of things, especially because, you know, as your business grows and develops, you know, you get all these ideas and it's hard to kind of prioritize what's important and what's not. You know, what do you do to make sure you prioritize your time correctly? And, you know, obviously as entrepreneurs, we have to try new things, right. but how do you prioritize that in your daily schedule?
So my biggest two weapons for, you know, fighting the fight against time are my whiteboard and I use a service online called Trello. It's free.
You know, Trello.
Trello, right? So it's okay. basically like a
– How do you spell that? I'll actually put a link to that in the podcast okay. description yeah, for people to check out.
It's called T-R-E-L-L-O.
Trello, right? T-R-E-L-L-O. Oh, gotcha. Yep. Gotcha.
So Trello allows you to create a board and create a bunch of little mini boards under it. And basically organize your ideas. You can do checklists. You can do, you know, all different types of stuff. But it's basically a way to just organize stuff. I do my bills in this shit, you know, just
wow, okay.
so I can have a visual representation. You know, when I'm building beat packs or, you know, selling beats, it's easy to say, okay, this beat's in this pack. Somebody wants to buy it exclusively. Let me slide it over here so now I know it's sold. And I can, you know, keep a really great visual representation of what's going on, like, with all of my businesses. So. Like
100%.
It's basically like a digital whiteboard on steroids. So
I might have to sign up for that myself. I'll definitely put a link in the description for you guys to check that out. Yeah. If he says it's useful, I would take that as gospel, man. Like, you know, all of these people that I talk to, I handpicked them for a reason because they're self-motivated and they're busy and, you know, obviously successful. So I do want to take it back a little bit because I wrote down a note when we were talking about this. So you said you had most of your credits are in TV, so sync licensing. Mm-hmm. We've actually talked about this on the podcast before, and I've had Gummy Beats on here. I've had a bunch of producers on here that have done more of the same, and really that's where their focus is. So let's talk about the difference of producing for sync licensing versus producing for a rapper. Obviously, those things are drastically different. Some people would say they're not that different. What's your take on that?
Well, they are different, but I feel like they're different in one of the best ways possible. For me, as both a producer and an artist, when I'm doing music for sync licensing, it's how could I say this? It's much more freeing as an artist and a producer. I can do whatever I want to. Sometimes when I'm producing for an artist, I'm a little bit confined as far as, you know, what I know they want as far as sound. And when it comes to, you know, movie, TV, music, you can use your imagination. You can get as wild as you want to. There's no real rules to what you can do. You don't have to confine to what people know you for as an artist or as a producer. Try something new. If you want to do some, you know, I'm a rap and trap and R&B producer.
Mm-hmm.
But, and I rap, but I have a R&B song that I'm singing like in my sync licensing library that's gotten placed, you know, a couple of times. But I'm like, that's crazy. I'm like, this is something I wouldn't normally release for myself as an artist, but this is something I was just saying, hey, you know, I can just feel free to go and create and just make music. So, you know, to have that ability is great. The other thing about sync, as far as doing sync stuff, you can kind of put a lot more thought into what you're doing. Like if you have the right type of tune, you have the right type of song, you have the right type of lyrics, and you know how to theme things to apply to more than one, you know, more than one thing. You know how to not single people out. Like, you know, I always tell artists, don't start a song off and say this is for all my gangsters, because everybody who's not gangsters already like, this is not for me.
Right. So
if you know how to write inclusively, that's what I should say. If you know how to write inclusively, it'll work better for you as an artist in sync placements. And as a producer, you know, you just have the freedom to kind of use your imagination and take it to some places that you wouldn't normally, you know, you don't have to do the confined to a song. I don't have to do a certain number of bars. I can just whatever.
Right. It's interesting.
Go out here and paint.
I've gotten so many different answers on that question, and they're all drastically different from each other, but they also have the same thing in common. You know, you mentioned how there's, you know, the inclusive writing, essentially, you know, because obviously when music supervisors are going to look for songs, they're looking for something very specific, right. You know, which is interesting because you said that you feel that's more freeing, as to where some other producers I've talked to would agree with you. And then some say they feel that's a little bit more constricting because, you know, there are certain tracks that, you know, I guess it depends on the scenario. I guess if they're responding to a call or whatever it might be, you right. know what I mean? But there's always the very specific thing that music supervisors are looking for. What are some things that you notice, if there's really any, because, you know, there's no magic bullet to this stuff, but right. what are some common, I guess, sort of tracks or like kind of vibes or whatever that you feel are most successful as far as sync licensing goes?
For me, what I've noticed, both as an artist and a producer, is that higher energy tracks have gotten more placements for me.
Interesting.
Especially when it comes to sports themed stuff.
I can see that.
Anything sports related, they want something high energy. So, you know, that's the type of production I do. I do a lot of up tempo. I do a lot of high energy stuff. And when it comes to that, I'm like, hey man, I'm gonna give you everything that I got in that arena. But, and they eat it up. I mean, literally, I have a deal with APM through Reverb Nation. So all you artists that have signed up or know about Reverb Nation, those opportunity lists that they have going, all that stuff's real. So I got scouted by APM through them. They gave me an opportunity to submit some music, and they like what I submitted so much, they opened up the floodgates and said, send us whatever you want, you know. As long as you're affiliated with it as an artist, you can send it. Most of the time I produce my own stuff, so I'm usually a producer too, but you know, I can send whatever I want to. They love everything high energy. Anything I've done that's high energy has gotten placed multiple times. And I probably have like 30 or 40 placements at this particular time. So,
interesting.
Yeah, I've gotten a lot that haven't shown up on my list, but I get notifications of things that have getting, you know, takes time for ASCAP and BMI and all that sometimes. So.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure it does. Isn't it something, don't you usually get paid for, correct me if I'm wrong, but don't you usually get paid for sync licensing placements, something like you get paid for like last year's work, something like that?
Yeah, it usually takes about a year. From the time that I see something on TV to the time that I get a check in my hand for it. If there's no upfront sync licensing where they're just like, hey, we're going to cut you a check because we want this to be the theme song of the show. If it's nothing like that, then usually it's going to take about a year to see your bread on the back end.
So okay.
It is a waiting game. But with that in mind, it's like, keep working. Don't let that, you know, I got a placement right now since I have to wait a year. You're like, hey, in this year's time before I get this check, how many other placements can I get so that I can keep this train rolling?
Yeah. You know? Exactly. That's real. I mean, and that's where, I mean, that's exactly the same as chasing placements with an artist. You know, that's really no different at all because, you know, the record, most of the time you get a placement, but that record's not even coming out at least till the next 6 months to a year. Exactly. You know what I mean? And then you got to wait another 3, 4, however long months to get that check. You know what I mean? So yeah, that whole idea of like, shit, I'm just going to stack my work. So when the money does come in, like it'll be worth all the work that I'm putting in.
One good thing about the sync licensing, though, is that your song can keep getting used multiple times by multiple shows,
yes,
and multiple scenarios. So being able to build up a big catalog, like I do most of mine in library. I don't do a lot of, you know, responding to calls. I get mine put in a library that people get to choose from. So while they're out there looking for songs, my stuff's popping up. And, you know, for me, it's like, hey, the more stuff that I have in the system, the better opportunities I have for getting more placements. So, you know, my new goal is how can I have 100 to 500 songs in y'all system, whether it be me doing collabs with other people and, you know, I'm going to start splitting up the work. So, you know, I just start asking other producers to like, you know, hey, let's work together. Let's do something. Because anything I'm on as an artist, they'll take it. And they said it's just yes or no. The good thing is right. There's no politics involved. It's just strictly yes or no.
Yeah, that's pretty much what everybody has said is that it's a numbers game, man. It's really about how much work can you put in, but also how many libraries can you get your music in, because of the fact that it can be used. Like most, from what I hear, most of these deals are non-exclusive. You know what I mean? Yep. And actually that leads me to my next question. Is there a certain kind of deal that's better to take than the other, or is it just kind of depend on the scenario?
To me, it doesn't, to me, it didn't really matter. The way I look at it is, I'm working in quantity and quality. So even though some libraries want some things exclusive, I'm like, okay, I can give you 10, 15, 20 exclusive tracks, because then I can make other tracks and go give them to someone else. The great thing about that most artists don't know about the sync license is when they're asking for this, they're not taking your rights from you for the song, right? So say you get a song and you get it placed on a big show. Every time I get a placement, I drop those songs on iTunes. Because people start looking for them. People want to know what song that was in the trailer to that show that they kept hearing. People want to know what's this song in this scene in this movie. So when they're asking for that song or whatever it is from you exclusively, they're not saying don't put it out. They're saying don't shop it to another library.
Right.
You know, still take full advantage. They basically are giving you a platform to blow your songs up. Any placements that you get is free advertisement, and it's going to lead back to you if you've done your things the right way.
Cool, man. Well, I appreciate you answering those questions on it. It's a big topic that seems to come up quite a lot, and it's something I get questions on from my listeners all the time. And one common question, it's probably the most common question, and this was the last question I'll ask you about it, is with keywords and the importance of keywords. And that seems to be the most confusing and challenging thing for people when they first get started. And I've had numerous people ask me to ask, you know, the next guest you have, or could you go back and ask them to clarify? They seem to get really overwhelmed by it. They don't know where to start as far as the keywords go. What would you recommend to somebody who's like just trying to cut their teeth with sync licensing as far as keywords go?
So the beauty of keywords is, if you do think of it like a search engine, you know, if you think of it like you think of Google, like you think of YouTube, you know, the more words that you have, the more titles, the more variations, the more, the more words that you can use in songs will give you better opportunities, common phrases. You have to think of the things that people are looking for. This also goes down to the way that you even describe your songs, because they'll give you chances to describe, you know, the vibe of your song. So say if you've got something that's sad and, you know, sad and melodic and whatever it is, don't do 18 songs like that. Figure out how to kind of keyword stuff and say, okay, well, now that I've got one that's sad and melodic, maybe I'll do one that's depressed instead of sad. You know, it's the same. It might be the exact same vibe, but you taking advantage of stacking those keywords and saying, okay, this one's sad, this one's depressed, this one's lonely. They all the same thing, but you can't control what someone's looking for on the other end. So why not just beat the system by saying, okay, if I make this type of track, let me give it the I always give this analogy, like Taco Bell. Like, you know, if we take the Mexican food approach, right? Mm-hmm. So tortilla, cheese, meat, and vegetables. You can take it as a taco. I can roll it up as a burrito. I can chop up the tortilla and nachos. Like, you just have to figure out how to serve them the same thing 30 different ways. And if you have 30 different records, they might be the same vibe. Just figure out how to give them all different descriptions, different meanings, different words that somebody be looking for. And you'll make the most out of it, guaranteed. Because, you know, you can't control what someone's looking for, but you want to pop up everywhere. So go in volume and be as varied as possible is what I would suggest.
Yeah, that's actually a great way of putting it. And honestly, you rappers listening should have no problem with that at all. You know what I mean? That's pretty much what you guys do for a living. So, you know, just think of as many different analogies as you can. And, you know, you should know the emotion also and what your track is supposed to invoke. So I like the way you put it, like, you know, kind of just recognize what the original emotion is and then find 70 different ways to serve that emotion. You know, that's dope. That's a dope way to put that. So I want to take it back just a little bit. You said that you also, as well as a producer, had some success as an artist. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
I toured, you know, as a younger artist. Did a tour with Crime Mob. As I've said, you know, a lot of these placements that I've got I've gotten kind of as an artist and a producer at the same time. You know, so these are, you know, my songs, you know, my actual songs that are being used in movies. Saturday Night Live thing was a Tracy Morgan skit, which was, you know, awesome.
That was like, wow, that's huge.
Right when he came back, I was like, oh man, you know, amazing thing to be
that's
part of.
That's huge.
And just as an artist, being able to tour and, you know, and make money and see success, to, you know, have my music in different places. Like, I started really young and performed a lot. I did a lot of, you know, I pretty much opened for every major artist that I could think of that, you know, came around, you know, my region or whatever. So, like, that list was really long. So being able to do that, go on tour, being a recording artist, have music on, you know, movies and TV, like, that, it still defines me as an artist just as much as it does as a producer, because I kind of play both roles while doing it.
Right.
So, yeah, but I don't think I've done any major features as far as, like, with anybody else that would be notable. Like, I haven't paid for a lot of big artists to be on my stuff. So, you know, to any artist out there that's wondering, it's like, yo, you can do that shit on your own. You don't have to, you know, not to say don't pay other artists, because you should. It's a music economy. If you pay into it, you'll get paid out of it. I highly, highly believe in that. But, you know, being able to accomplish certain shit doesn't require you going and dropping $70,000 for some major artist to right. get on your shit. You know, if you're really on your shit and you make quality music and, you know, you make sure that your shit is, you know, mixed and matched quality, you know, you can get yourself into some great opportunities. For me, as an artist, I always say, drop your music. This is what most artists don't do. Don't hoard. Don't be a fucking music hoarder. Don't be selfish with your music. Your music is not for you. It's for the rest of the world. It's a lesson I have to teach. It's a lesson I have to tell myself all the time too. But put your shit out, right? Because, right. In theory, right, everything is a pebble in the ocean. Everything creates its own ripple, right? So instead of just throwing out one song or thinking you have to throw out an entire album of 18 songs at a time, and then it needs to be 2 or 3 years before they hear from you again, drop all your shit. Drop consistently. Go to the studio. If you don't feel like you're going to go back and get it mixed and mastered, fucking drop it anyway.
Yeah.
People want to grow with you as an artist. If you're not the best right now, don't worry about being the best before you start dropping. You know, start here. Your real fans are going to are gonna remember you when you sucked and be like, yo, he's got to play.
That's real. That's real shit. There's probably a couple people listening right now and be like, yo, I was one of those D. Lynch fans.
I'm saying, but I feel like every artist goes through that. Like, as you grow as an artist, you know, you go through your different phases of, you know, what kind of defines you and being able to find yourself. So, you know, record a lot. You know, buy a lot of beats. You know, if you're an artist, take advantage of these beat pack deals and shit that everybody's doing, because this is really playing to your biggest advantage right now. You know, and you know, go run it up. You know, the best thing you can do for yourself as an artist is go get as many spins as possible, because spins translate into money, and all that shit translates into building a buzz and building a following. So why shouldn't you drop all your music? Drop everything. Drop it all.
Yeah, no, seriously. Okay. You hit the nail right on the head when you said you don't make music for you, you make it for the world, you know. Mm-hmm. Some of my biggest records are my least favorite, you know what I mean? And it's just how it goes, man. Some of my most popular beats on BeatStars are not my favorites.
Never know. I'm like, it's always my favorites that are my favorites for a completely different reason. And right. I think as an artist and as a producer, you want people to recognize those, and, you know, like, the people that do, like, we happy and appreciative that they recognize, you know, the intricacy or whatever type of work we're putting into that. But those are never the ones that everybody else likes. However,
100%.
However, I'm like, if you think about it like that, the songs that everybody like, if you didn't like it that much, there was still a reason that you did it. The reason that you're, you know, your hands composed it, or you wrote those words and you spoke them into the mic, and that happens to be everybody's favorite, even though it might not be the joint that you like, you're like, I don't know why everybody likes that fucking song. It's the fucking worst song on my album. But you did it, though.
It's just like, how it goes, man.
There was some part of your heart and soul that told you to do that shit and say it and put it out, and you were meant to. So, you know.
Yeah, like, I couldn't agree more.
You know, you never know what's going to hit, man. Put all your shit out. That's my best advice for our artists. Don't save nothing. Save
100%,
nothing.
100%. At least everything. Right. I couldn't agree with you more, man. It's that's something I learned early on. You know what I mean? And it's just no good sitting in the vault. I mean, I guess maybe if you blow up down the line, you can release a B-sides album or whatever, but you know what I mean? But other than that, man, like, even if you're not 100% loving it, you know, like you said, people can follow your growth. They can follow the journey and, you know, they can see the progress. So speaking of which, and I guess we'll wrap it up on this, but you know what, speaking of releasing music, what are you currently listening to? What records that just came out or came out in the last whatever that you're fucking with?
Man, to be honest, man, I'm such a fan of everybody's music, man. And you know, I know that sounds like such a generic answer, but I literally try to listen to everything.
Yeah,
you know,
no, I'm the same way.
I follow probably about 100 different Spotify playlists because I'm always just trying to, you know, get it here. And I'll be honest, like, I get to the point where I don't even listen to a lot of songs a lot of times, but I just feel like I need to digest it all. Like, you know, it's like, it's all information. So, right. You know, I go through massive playlists and just listen to music, you know, and let that shit run my day in the background while I'm doing other stuff. Some songs I can't pick out, some songs I save. I have a whole playlist of stuff, but what I will do is I'm a drop a playlist myself of just, you know, stuff that I've been listening to, new artists I've been working with and things like that. And put that out. So if anybody wants to just take a peek at, you know, what my ear is like, I'll put that at rawkey.com/playlist.
Rawkey.com/playlist.
Yep, /playlist.
I'll write that down and I'll put that in the description as well. Rawkey.com/playlist. You guys heard it here first. I will definitely be checking that out myself. You guys go listen, check that out, give it a listen. There, before we wrap this up, man, is there anything you wanted to let anybody know? First of all, where can people follow you on social media other than your website? I got your website, but what about your social media?
Yeah, so other than my website, Rob P Beats on Instagram, you know, all together, on Twitter, Young Lord. I'm also Young Lord. I think Young Lord KY on Instagram, but yeah, Raw Key Beats is the best place there. Also younglord.com. You can find Raw Key Beats on YouTube, like, you know, rawkey.com. So, you know, everything Raw Key. All Rawkey, all together. One word.
Oh man, there you go. You guys go give him a follow, go check him out. Is there anything else you want to, any shout outs, anything you want to do, anything you want to let the people know?
Yeah, man. Shout out to for me, shout out to the whole Raw Key gang, man. Everybody's following me and participating in my movement right now, man. Shout out to you, you know, and your positivity and what you're putting out here, man, because I follow you and what you got going on as well, man. So shout out to you and your whole gang. And really shout out to, you know, shout out to the Midi Money gang as well. Everybody in there making
money,
of course. And, you know, shout out to the new wave of artists that's on the come up, man. All these business savvy artists that's being in control of their own careers, man. I'm really proud of a lot of y'all and what y'all doing. It's a lot of new millionaires being made, like, yeah, right before our eyes. Like, a lot of shit is happening. So, you know, if you dedicate yourself to this, man, and you really want to get out here and do this shit seriously and make some money, man, you can. So, you know, shout out to all y'all that's in the pursuit of this shit, man. You know, I hope y'all meet y'all goals and hope I meet y'all somewhere on the way. Dig.
That's right. That's right. So what's in store for Raw Key Beats in 2020, man?
We about to sign some producers. That's what's on the map for us. I got another thing in the cut. I'm gonna be trying to sign some artists, but I want to sign some producers first because I don't want it to be just, you know, I don't want the whole workload to be just on me, and I want to be able to share some of the love as far as what I've been doing, as far as branding myself. So you know, as a company, I want to expand, give some other producers a chance to shine, and you know, and work with some artists. So, you know, artist has been asking if we signing people, man. It's coming. I'm gonna get y'all some producers first, though. I'm gonna have a whole squad for y'all. So, you know, by the time you come in, you know, we're just gonna be able to load you up, like, no problem.
Hey, there you go. You guys heard it here first. Well, bro, I appreciate your time, man. I appreciate you coming through. There's a lot of gems in this podcast episode. I wish you the best of luck, and I'll definitely be tuning in. Y'all go follow this man, follow him on his journey. Sounds like they got a lot of dope shit in store.
Thank you.
We out. It's been season 4, episode 2 of the Dean Lynch Podcast. Until next time, everybody. Peace. Peace.